manufacturing program. Despite legislation passing with overwhelming bipartisan support in the House in past sessions, this important legislation has repeatedly hit a roadblock in the Senate. Today, I'm pleased to announce my plans to pre-file prescription drug monitoring program legislation next week and to work with my colleagues to see Missouri become a level playing field with the rest of the country when it comes to providing doctors, pharmacists, and if necessary, law enforcement, an important tool in the fight against prescription drug abuse. I have yet to hear someone claim that drug trafficking and prescription drug abuse is not a serious issue impacting every corner of our state. On the contrary, let me provide some startling facts and figures to put this epidemic, and that's according to the Centers for Disease Control, not just me, into perspective. Each day in the United States, an estimated 46 people die due to prescription drug overdose. Nearly 15,000 people die every year of overdoses involving prescription painkillers. In 2010, one in 20 people in the U.S. aged 12 or older reported using prescription painkillers for non-medical reasons in the past year. Let me take a moment to explain the intent of a prescription drug monitoring program. This legislation would create a secure database for doctors and pharmacists to maintain and check information about patients who have been prescribed drugs that have a high potential for being abused or misused, such as painkillers or other narcotics. The PDMP would not contain information about prescriptions for antibiotics or other medications. In addition to alerting medical professionals about potential doctor shoppers, it can also act as an early warning system for prescribers to avoid dangerous drug interactions and to ensure quality patient care. Only doctors and pharmacists would have access to this information. In fact, law enforcement would now be required to obtain a warrant to access the information, providing yet another layer of protection for patients. And on that note, I share concerns that have been raised about the privacy rights of those who may be included in the prescription drug monitoring program. I am open to working with any member of the General Assembly to ensure the privacy provisions are crafted as tightly as possible. As we said many times, every state now has this. So certainly Missouri can come up, can craft a piece of legislation that protects privacy while saving lives. Drug addiction crosses all backgrounds. This is not what some have felt is someone else's problem. My daughter became addicted to prescription drugs at 17. She cut her finger at work. She went to the emergency room to get it stitched up and was given a script of Lorazepam. When she finished that prescription, she just started buying them from people at work. We've been 12 years down the road of ups and downs and rehabs. This is something that hits everyone. At different conventions that I've spoke at, when I say, who all here has a personal story of how this has affected them, everybody raises their hand. This is an epidemic across America. And Missouri has to take that seriously. With that, I look forward to answering any questions you have following the speakers that are coming up. And I'll turn it over to Bob Twillman, who's the Executive Director of the American Academy of Pain Management.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here this afternoon to talk about this very important issue. This is an issue that I've spent considerable time talking about. The Academy supports prescription drug monitoring programs across the country, and I personally have been to a number of states to testify in favor of establishing those programs or efforts to upgrade them. And I've been to Jefferson City more times than I wish to count, trying to support the passage of this legislation as well. You know, we're confronted in pain management with a major public health crisis in this country. That's the crisis of unrelieved chronic pain, which affects 100 million Americans and costs our economy up to $600 billion per year. Prescription drug monitoring programs, although many people don't recognize it, are an important tool for healthcare providers who are treating people with pain. Because of the atmosphere now around prescription drug abuse, many patients find themselves being questioned when they go in to see their physicians or other prescribers. And some of them have a very hard time getting those prescribers to give them what's needed to adequately control their pain until those prescribers check the state's prescription drug monitoring program. Almost always when they do that, what they discover is that these folks are perfectly safe to use these medications. They have a history of appropriate use of the medications, and that provides a measure of relief of the anxiety for the prescriber so that they're able to then go ahead and give people what they need to treat their pain. Unfortunately, sometimes when you look at a prescription drug monitoring program report, what you also find is evidence of someone who has a problem with substance abuse. And that's an important thing for us, too, as healthcare providers, because what that tells us is this person has another kind of healthcare problem that needs to be addressed. Almost everyone who is addressing the crisis of prescription drug abuse in this country views it as a public health issue, one that needs to be approached from that standpoint, one that needs to get, that means we need to get folks into adequate treatment for their problems. One of the things I also do, in addition to my sort of day job with the Academy of Pain Management, is that I chair the advisory committee for the Kansas Prescription Drug Monitoring Program, known as KTRACS. One of the, I think, the most gratifying experiences that I've had as part of that experience is shortly after we started the program, we received a letter from a gentleman who said, "I'm very glad that you folks have this program, that the state of Kansas decided to set this up, because I had a real problem. I was abusing prescription drugs, and I was going to multiple doctors and using multiple pharmacies to get those medications that I was abusing. And I didn't, of course, want to tell my healthcare providers about that. But one day, my doctor checked KTRACS and saw what was going on in my history, and he said, hey, you know, maybe we need to talk about this. Maybe you have a problem here with some prescription drug abuse. As a result of that, I've been able to get treated. Now I've been abstinent for a couple of years now, and I'm very pleased that the program was able to help me accomplish that. So that's a second very important use of these programs. And then a third thing that we see is that sometimes, frankly, patients don't remember all the medications that they have at home. And inadvertently, we can give them an additional medication that, when it's combined with what they do have at home, creates a toxic mix. Either one of those substances by themselves might be okay, but the combination is too much. Checking the prescription drug monitoring program allows us to see that and to take the appropriate actions to protect the safety of people. So there's been a lot of focus on prescription drug monitoring programs over the years as a public safety tool, when it's used to catch people who are going to see multiple prescribers using multiple pharmacies in order to accumulate enough drugs that they can go out and sell them to other people. But that's really a tiny fraction of what these programs are used for. The vast majority of use of these programs is by clinicians, by prescribers, by pharmacists who are treating people who have pain and other problems that respond to controlled substances. In fact, we checked that in the Kansas database, and what we discovered was 0.03% of all inquiries were inquiries that came from law enforcement. That means that 997 times out of every 1,000, those inquiries came from healthcare providers instead. So this really is a public health tool. It needs to be talked about in those terms and needs to be recognized as those terms. And I hope that we're able to communicate that message to the legislature this year so that they can see that this really is a very helpful tool, something that really kind of goes to those words in Latin that are on the front of this building that talk about the welfare of the people. This really is a program that is for the welfare of the people of Missouri. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. My name is Jeff Rowland. I'm the Deputy Chief of Police for the Poplar Bluff, Missouri Police Department. And I was asked to speak just briefly about law enforcement. It's very important. Law enforcement is not, and I want to repeat, is not asking the PDMP to give us more tools to investigate these crimes. In fact, it's the exact opposite. If the PDMP is put in place, and we've just heard from our speaker how successful it was in a neighboring state, if it is used to its fullest, doctors and pharmacists will head this problem off way before it gets to law enforcement. Law enforcement does not need to police the doctors. Most of the doctors across the state are doing the right thing. There are a handful of them that are not. We have the power of subpoena. We have the power of search warrant. The power of subpoena and search warrant has judicial and prosecutorial review. So there is oversight in place already for those mechanisms to allow law enforcement to investigate crimes. What we are asking for is the PDMP, because it will save lives. Simply put, this will save lives. I don't know anyone that could stand up here and say that's not important. Law enforcement, unfortunately, gets the duty of notification on a lot of deaths. It's a requirement that we sit down and we talk to families, and we have to tell them what happened to their loved one. And they are astounded that it's a legal substance. And they ask the question, how can that be? If a doctor and a pharmacist are giving him my son, my daughter, whatever, my wife, these prescriptions, how can they overdose on it? And it's because of doctor shopping. It's because of forgeries. The PDMP will take care of those issues. Missouri is unique. It is a border state. We have a lot of states border us. Poplar Bluff is in the Boot Hill. We have a number of states border us. It is amazing the amount of pharmacists that will call us and say, why is someone from Kentucky, Tennessee, Arkansas, Illinois, why are they in my small pharmacy in Poplar Bluff and Donovan and Hayti and Crothersville? They ask those questions. Why would someone travel 50, 60, 70, 80, 100 miles to get a prescription filled? Because they are circumventing their state's program. You talk to law enforcement in those states. They're not really happy with Missouri. They fought the fight. They've won the fight. They thought they were doing good. They thought they were saving lives. And what turned around to find out? Missouri is allowing that to go on, and it's bringing right back to their jurisdiction the same problem that they fought and defeated. And we're saving lives. So again, law enforcement is not asking for more authority. We want the doctors to be able to accurately and fully treat their patients. We want the pharmacists to know when they are doctor shopping and why, to save a life, simply put. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. I'm Dr. Steve Kaitan, and it's an honor to be part of this conference today. I've been a physician for 25 years and have practiced as a board-certified internist and pediatrician for the past 20 years. I spent 10 years in private practice, 7 years working in emergency rooms, and the last 4 years running an academic clinic. Needless to say, I've witnessed the uses and abuses of controlled substances in a variety of settings. Controlled substances are prescription medications scheduled by the Drug Enforcement Agency because of their potential for abuse, are incredibly beneficial medications for certain patients with acute or chronic pain or anxiety. Many people absolutely need these medications for their overall well-being and function. And you might think that all these people are disabled, and some are, but others look just like you or me. If you have ever had an acute injury and have been treated with these pain medications, you know how important they are. But because of the recreational potential of prescription narcotic anxiety medications, they are often diverted from their intended use and sold on the street, leading to addiction and dangerous misuse. Between 6 and 7 million Americans have abused prescription medications in the past month, and the abuse of prescription drugs exceeds that of cocaine, hallucinogens, inhalants, and heroin combined. Those addicted to or selling these meds seek ways to obtain larger amounts, often seeing multiple physicians or multiple pharmacies so that no other pharmacy or physician is aware of the other. And this is a life or death issue. Each year, tens of thousands of people die from unintentional drug abuses or overdoses nationwide, more deaths than caused by motor vehicle accidents in many states. This death toll has doubled in the last decade, and it's happening all around us. Missouri has the 7th highest overdose rate in the country. In the past year, I've had 3 patients with family members who have died of drug overdoses, and my wife had a staff member whose husband met the same fate. Many of these people can be very high-functioning. You may recall that future Hall of Fame quarterback Brett Favre and radio host Rush Limbaugh both battled addiction to prescription narcotics. Worse yet, these drugs have made it into our schools. A 2010 study found that 4 out of the 5 drugs abused by high school seniors were pharmaceuticals. Every day, approximately 2,500 teens abuse a prescription narcotic for the very first time. Especially worrisome is the trend of oral prescription narcotic use in high school, leading to IV heroin use, an even riskier habit. And addiction to these meds is blind to educational and socioeconomic status, as we have heard. A few years ago, a former politician's son came to me because he couldn't maintain his grades in college while sustaining his IV heroin habit. He had started using prescription oral narcotics while in high school and progressed to injecting heroin. I'm happy to say that with a ton of work and support, he is in recovery and back in college, but he could easily be in jail or dead. The Missouri state government can and should help their health care providers fight this epidemic. A recent report ranked Missouri next to the last in establishing regulatory action to prevent prescription drug abuse. A prescription drug monitoring program would be a giant leap forward in this effort and is critical for physicians to be able to prescribe these medications safely. It would allow us to ensure that the patient is receiving only the quantity of pills that he or she needs, thus preventing addiction and diversion. There's even potential for this program to save on tax dollars. In 2010, over 1 million ER visits nationwide were related to non-medical use of these pharmaceuticals. In several states, a prescription drug monitoring program has been shown to decrease Medicaid costs by decreasing physician and emergency room visits and prescription costs. We are the Show Me State, and I believe that 49 other states have shown us that the benefits of a state prescription drug monitoring program vastly outweigh any downside. Physicians want this program, pharmacists want it, and patients want it. It's time for Missouri to protect its citizens, especially our young people. Thank you.
We had one additional speaker, Mr. Jim Marshall, who is having some traffic problems getting here, but he had lost his son to a heroin addiction. And so Heidi is available to give Mr. Marshall's contact information for anyone wishing to speak with him, but we'll now open it up for questions.
A couple of things, Holly. Number one, you mentioned search warrants by police, and you mentioned limiting the drugs on the list to those that are subject to abuse, painkillers, the OxyContins, as opposed to the more mundane stuff that we all take every day.
Yes, sir.
Those two aspects are new from previous incarnations of this legislation?
No, sir. This was actually included in last year's legislation as well. I think that it wasn't highlighted near enough.
That brings me to my next question then. I look over here and I see a headline that says, why does Missouri not have a prescription drug monitoring program? And if I had to answer that in three words, I'd say Senator Rob Shaw. He's back. His leadership doesn't show any indication that they are going to hammer him in any way on this issue. What has changed that you would be successful this year where you've not been in the past?
I've spoke with House leadership, and this is priority for them as well. And we really feel that with the public outcry that we've had this past year, you know, there's been several with the New York Times story. There's been several more with the media has really picked this up and realize that this is shameful for Missouri. And I really feel like we're ready to work with him for him to tell us what privacy strengthening do we need to do to make him happy. So we're very willing to work with every senator, but especially Senator Shaw, to try to address his concerns. But I think that with the public outcry that we have now, I think that that's going to move the ball forward.
So are you planning to pre-file the same bill that you had in the House last year?
Yes, ma'am. That is what my plan is for next week. I'm going to pre-file last year's bill. It passed the House with a bipartisan overwhelming support. And so I think that's the best place to start. And then that gives us the groundwork to entertain what the Senate may need to make it acceptable to them.
Components that Senator Schaaf talked about when I asked him about this earlier this fall was that he was asking for a statewide vote, saying, well, if voters want it, I'll get out of the way. Put a referendum clause on it, he'll back off. The second thing was that he wanted perhaps some sort of a time limit on the period of time that the data would remain on, say 6 months or a year, and then whatever prescription you had would fall off of the back end of the list. Are either of those two ideas acceptable to you?
We are absolutely able to work with maybe a time frame as far as how long the back data is going to be stored, as long as it's revolving. You understand what I mean? But as far as it going to a popular vote, that is a stall tactic. That is something that will push this out even further, cost a ton of money in a campaign. You know, when it comes to a change to our Constitution, that needs to go to a vote of the people, but the people elected us to come and make these hard decisions. And this is, you know, something that all other states have seen the need for, and we're very much suffering with Missouri being surrounded by eight other states.
And I wanted to ask the doctor or Mr. Twillman, or Dr. Keithan, or do you see any issues with having a time limit for the amount of time that your prescription would remain in that system?
If the time limit is too short, it can be an issue. To the best of my knowledge, no other state has a time limit that's shorter than 3 years. I believe Senator Schaaf had a bill last year that had something like a six-month time limit in it, and that's actually too short. You really need, at the very least, a year and preferably 2 or 3 years' history to see what's developed over the past period of time for these folks.
We don't seem to have any technical people here, but one of the things Dr. Schaaf has hit on repeatedly is that he's not worried about police. He's worried about some teenager, I guess, or some tabloid reporter, or somebody who can hack into this information and then exploit it. And he always talks about politicians and entertainment figures and sports figures and the voracious appetite for scandal surrounding such people, and that there is no such thing as a secure database. Speak to that, if you will.
So the data in these in PDMPs is considered private health information, and it's every bit as secure as anything else that's in your electronic medical records. So it really is extremely secure. In fact, the level of security that's associated with these data is higher than the level of security for your bank records. So they're really very secure, and the only way somebody's going to actually be able to get in there and get the information and use it is if they're already an authorized user to access the system. They're virtually impossible to hack.
And I would just add, you know, how is that different from medical records, from electronic medical records that we have? You know, if that has gone well, and this is not any additional information. And so I would certainly ask him, how does that differ?
Are there any penalty provisions in this legislation for people who might leak such information or in some way allow it to be disclosed publicly?
Yes, sir.
And what are those?
I believe it's a $1,000 fine, and then there is also, I think it's a Class A misdemeanor, and it depends on the level of person that's, if it's an authorized user versus, so I'll have to look at that to get you a copy of that so that I can get you the exact wording, but there are penalties included.
Representative, if this had been in place, how would it have affected your daughter's situation?
I'm so glad that you asked that. This is in Sykeston, and Jeff and I know with being down in the boot heel, we do have so many, you know, states around us. But with my daughter, the places that she was buying them from, has bought them from, have been people who are getting 3 and 4 prescriptions a month, 300 pills. A prescription, and then they're selling those. And so what this really does is this is a line of defense. It keeps it from getting to the street. And so what it does is it allows that pharmacist. I have a pharmacist in Charleston who is just amazing, and he is also police force. And he has had to arrest folks in his pharmacy. He has had to put his badge on and go around the counter and arrest someone. I mean, he's amazing. But that is what we're up against down in the boot heel. And with this, my daughter wouldn't have had access to as many pills to purchase. And so it gives that pharmacist a look to say, hey, you've already filled a script 2 days ago over in Poplar Bluff, or you've, you know, filled one 2 weeks ago over in Sykeston.
She was doctor shopping?
She was not, but she was purchasing them from someone who did. And so it keeps that off the street. It makes the pills not as prevalent.
I think it's a very good point you bring up.
When you law enforcement investigates a number of illegal drugs, a lot of them come from outside the country. We don't know the distribution points. With this, we know the distribution point. We know how it starts. We know where it stops. It starts at a doctor's office, and it goes to a pharmacy. We just need to control that distribution point. It's that simple.
Chief, how big a problem is this overall down your part of the state?
Butler County?
Yeah. Well, Butler.
Butler County is a community of 43,000. We average one prescription drug overdose every 10 to 12 days. And you just can extrapolate that over the entire state. You know, we went from the methamphetamine trials and tribulations and pseudoephedrine, and addicts are addicts. And they shift gears, and they go to the easiest point, and what has become the easiest point to get a substance that is legal and needed. They go to the pharmacy, they go to the doctors, they get multiple scripts, and they go to the pharmacy, they purchase these, they sell them to support their habits and their needs, and unfortunately, people like Holly's daughter die. And that's happening consistently.
Does anyone have an estimate of the percentage of these type of drugs, the Adderalls, the OxyContins, the various other drugs that are being diverted into abuse? Is it 5%, 30%, half of the drugs that are being sold out of Missouri pharmacies?
Well, to my colleagues.
I don't have a complete answer for you, but to the issue of doctor shoppers, what I can tell you is that it's estimated that that represents about 0.7% of people who get prescriptions, but those 0.7% of people account for about 3% of all the medications that are being prescribed. Mm-hmm. So there's a significant amount that's going to those people who are trying to accumulate a lot of drugs.
And when you say 3% of all medications being prescribed?
Controlled substances.
But if you're talking, would that include if I'm getting a medicine for my allergies, and then medicine for allergies, medicine for pain, medicine for ADHD, all of them thrown in together, that's 3%.
It's 3% of all controlled substances. So that would be your stimulants.
Anything that's prescribed.
No. So controlled substances are your stimulants like your Adderall and Ritalin and so forth, benzodiazepines, drugs like Valium and Xanax, opioids, medications like the Vicodin, Lortab, OxyContin, those kinds of medications. So those are the three primary groups that make up the controlled substances.
Okay. How does the program for prescription drug monitoring, how would it compare to a program that's already in place right now called NPLEX, which monitors the tracks the cell of Sudafed?
I think I'd have to get back to you on the details about that, but I think the difference is that with NPLEX, that's not something that's searchable by healthcare providers, to the best of my knowledge. That's pretty much something that's restricted to law enforcement use as far as I know, but I'd need to get back to you on the details of that.
With the medical records databases that we now have, how difficult would it be just to go through that system to get the information instead of setting up something new?
Well, the problem is that the medical records databases that we have right now don't all talk to each other. So, you know, from one clinic to another, they're using different software vendors, and the different software vendors don't talk to each other, and there are dozens of those literally. So right now we don't have the ability for those programs to really give you that comprehensive picture. So not only can one clinic not talk to each other, but then if you're someone who's not in either of those clinics, to try to get data from both of them or any place else someone's been, it would be a logistical nightmare to make that happen right now.
Plus it's not 100%.
That's right.
Representative, that raises the fiscal note question. What is the current cost to taxpayers for this legislation?
You know, right now the legislation is written to be funded by grants and scholarships, and there's some federal monies available to be able to get this up and running. We are, however, looking at, across all these other states. They have put together some, as you can imagine, different ways to pay for this. So we are looking at additional avenues right now. And I know the governor's office has also expressed that they feel that they'd come up with something that might be able to be a funding source. And so we're waiting. We've not seen that language yet, but we're just waiting to get that back from them. So that's certainly something that we're open to as well. But right now the legislation is written as it was last year, and that was to be funded by grants and personal donations.
Zero cost.
To the state, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
You know, none of the pharmacies can talk to each other either. So, you know, Walgreens or CVS or Walmart, they can all talk to themselves, and they have programs, but none of the companies have exchange of information between their pharmacies. So that's the other layer of this, not only in the physician's office, but also in the pharmacies, that they'd all be able to talk to each other. So if someone filled something at CVS and they're in the, you know, 100 miles away at a Walgreens, they'd be able to talk to each other and know that that happened the day before.
Chief Rowland, there's something in place for monitoring pseudoephedrine and all of the places that sell it. I remember when it first went into effect, Walgreens on Kings Highway in Cape Girardeau turned out to be the one selling the most pseudoephedrine in the entire state. Has that program, to your knowledge, cut pseudoephedrine sales in your part of the state?
I can tell you what cut pseudoephedrine sales is ordinance making it a prescription medication. Uh-huh. Emplex, it was set up to, as you're chasing. Someone has already purchased the drug. By the time you get on that trail, they've already, you can, the one bottle shake and bake meth, it's already been made by the time you were even notified of it. So what's changed in methamphetamine enforcement is the pseudoephedrine ordinance is where you had to get a prescription. Poplar Bluff was one of the second cities to do that. And our meth seizures have went, they just plummeted. You ask, now you see meth coming from outside the country. Again, distribution points. With a controlled substance, with a scheduled substance, we know those distribution points. You have to be a licensed pharmacist. And so when the pharmacist and the doctor can talk to one another with that system, doctors can talk to themselves through that system, they can better treat their patients, and they can avoid what we're talking about.
And for the doctors, he's pointed out something that may happen in this instance. It's a shift to a black market, out of country, perhaps even fake or badly made pills. Aren't badly made street drugs more dangerous to addicts than pharmaceutically created and manufactured to a certain standard drugs?
Yes, they are more dangerous, but that's sort of beside the point. And that illustrates one of the problems that we have that is a secondary issue that has to be addressed here. As long as all we're doing is working on the supply of the medication, then all we're really doing is squeezing the balloon. And we've been doing that for the last 40 years. You know, it just goes from one drug to another. In the 70s, we had a heroin problem. In the 80s, that became a cocaine problem. In the 90s and the 2000s, it became a methamphetamine problem. Then it became a prescription drug problem, and now that we're addressing the prescription drug problem, it's once again becoming a heroin problem. So all we do is we squeeze the balloon in one place and it pops out in another. The way to fix the problem is to let the air out of the balloon by providing adequate resources to treat people who have addictions.
Question. Rudy asked a question a minute ago that made me ask this. If we've been able to define which pharmacies are selling the most pseudoephedrine under the present system, will this enable anybody, state or whomever, to compile a list of pharmacies that are selling the most prescription drugs in any way that would indicate something?
We do have the capability to do that with our program in Kansas, but really that doesn't tell us very much without going into the pharmacy and finding out why that would be the case. So, you know, in some situations, and a couple of prominent examples come to mind from Florida, where there were pharmacies in very small towns were selling an exorbitant amount of medication. In those kinds of situations, that might be helpful. But for the most part, it's really not that helpful to look at the data on that level.
Yeah, because Sudafed was over the counter, and so it was really up to the pharmacy, where these medications are prescribed by physicians, so it's really tracking back to the physician and the appropriate prescription pattern of that provider.
Representative Rader, I just want to thank you. Kudos to you for sharing your personal experience with everyone, because with the stigma involved in addiction, I know that's been, you know, hard, so I appreciate it.
Right. Well, thank you so much. And that is, you know, I am a firm believer, and you've heard me say this before, you know, God didn't give me a stage so I'd keep my mouth shut. I mean, this is something that is affecting families all across America. This is an epidemic that we need to face, and we need to talk about it and come to some solutions to help people. So thank you all so very much.